This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Good times, bad hangovers, and a lot of coffee. It's another edition of the Dustin McComa Show on theyak.com. This is episode 18, and it is a bi-week edition when we're discussing Texas Longhorns football, because the Longhorns don't have a game this weekend, and it's an opportunity for everybody to kind of catch their breath. It's an opportunity for Texas players, especially those on the injury report, to hopefully get healthier with an opportunity to just not play football on a Saturday, although I don't know what their practice schedule is this weekend. But no game for the Longhorns this week. Just another reminder that the college football season does fly by. I mean, Texas has already played four games. So the regular season is a third of the way through, and it moves quick. There's not that many home games left for the Longhorns, which makes me, you know, want to shed a tear, because the Orange Bloods tailgates have been just so incredible this year. Although I'll be looking forward to cooler temperatures at the next OrangeBloods.com tailgate, hopefully. So it moves quick. It's a bye week edition, so we don't have a game to preview, but I will spend some time looking back at what I believe is the main takeaway from this past weekend's Oklahoma State game. A big win for the Longhorns to start Big 12 play 1-0 against a team that I think, at least offensively, is the one team not named Oklahoma that could really challenge Texas, that is really equipped offensively to really challenge that defense. So the Longhorns got that one out of the way, and they broke that streak too. Oklahoma State had won, I believe, five straight in Austin, four straight overall. So the Longhorns do break that streak with the 36-30 win. Again, we'll talk some more about that, but really, it's, you know, I was trying to think back to when preseason camp started, because we can't call it fall camp because it's not in the fall. It starts in the summer. So, you know, technically speaking, I can't think of the last like weekend where there wasn't something football related we at OrangeBloods.com were covering or asking around about or just thinking about. You know, ever since camp opened, there's probably been a practice or a scrimmage or a game or just something for every weekend until now. So it's an opportunity for everybody to hit the reset button. It's the opportunity for the Longhorns to get on the road recruiting-wise, to catch their breath as well. I forget which parent it was on Twitter, but I saw a parent of one of the current players like saying the parents are worn out too, and I believe it. I believe it. It takes a lot out of the parents as well. You know, going down to Houston and watching the game against Rice, and then the LSU game just being such an up and down affair, and then the Oklahoma State game, as weird as that was, and the season opener against Louisiana Tech. So it takes a lot. Everybody just needs a break. Everybody needs a break. So this is a bi-week edition of the Dustin McComa Show, and I thank you always for tuning into theyak.com and listening. Get to theyak.com, check out all the great podcast content. Of course, after you finish this one, you know, to plug my other shows, I'm going to be start firing up the Drop and Dimes and the Extra Bases podcast a lot again, because we are getting closer to basketball season. Baseball's official offseason is just around the corner. I believe it's a little over 2 weeks away. Maybe it's 3 weeks. It's something like that. I believe they start officially on October 14th. So we'll have some Texas baseball to talk about as well. But going back to this Oklahoma State game, the main takeaway for me was that Texas probably played a C-plus kind of football game, and they still won. That hasn't been the norm for Texas over the last, I don't know, what do you want to say, half decade? You know, even going back to some of Mac's final years, there were opportunities there were occurrences where Texas didn't play perfectly, didn't play close to perfectly, and were still able to win the football game. This sort of thing hasn't happened for a while at Texas. So I think what that tells us is, and I'll get into more about the defense soon, because that was my biggest question mark heading into that game. But I think overall what this tells us is there's still a definite level of growth that this Texas football team can achieve. I think if you're a Texas fan, you would much rather prefer your team not peaking, not playing its best brand of football right now, as opposed to just, you know, a couple flawless performances and a couple other performances where you're like, yeah, they probably play like an A type of football game. That hasn't been the case for Texas yet. You know, against Louisiana Tech, they played well, but they still had some blown coverages and things like that on defense. LSU, obviously, the drop touchdown in the end zone, the 4th-and-1 stuff, the defense just – LSU had its way with the defense, you know, the 3rd-and-17 call, those things. Texas didn't play a perfect game. Going to Rice was the closest thing we've seen, I believe, to a perfect-type performance. But even then, there were some issues there as well. And then this Oklahoma State game, you have the muffed punts. You have that inexplicable decision on 4th-and-short where I don't know if it was Herman, if it was Ellinger, if it was both, but they just – quick snapped into a stacked box, which was very uncharacteristic of them. It's like the only time they did that all game, and it just happened to be on a 4th-and-short situation. You know, I already mentioned the muff punts, but that was huge. There's some weird coaching decisions, like why wasn't the hands team on the field in that onside kick situation? So Texas didn't play close to a perfect game against Oklahoma State, but they still won. They still found a way to win, even though they made it way more nerve-wracking for their fan base than it needed to be with that muffed punt and, you know, that 13-point lead quickly evaporating at the end of that game. But I think Texas fans should be encouraged by that because there's going to become a point in time that Texas is going to play nearly perfectly. And if it'll look different relative to the competition. You know, it's one thing if you play perfectly against Rice – on the scoreboard, it looks like a 40 or a 50-point win. If you play perfectly against Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl, that might be a 7-point win. That might be a 10-point win just because of the quality of competition you're facing. So I think that if you look at college football and you look at the best teams, they don't always play their best consistently. I'm going back to, you know, Longhorn Network did a documentary, I believe, on the 2008 team. And I don't remember the exact quote, but Mac Brown said something along the lines of, you know, you only get like 4 perfect performances all year. And then you just have to win those other times when you're not playing at your best. And I think that's a terrific point because even the Clemsons and the Alabamas and the Ohio States, they all have moments in the season where they're just not at their best. Maybe one game it's the offense. Maybe one game it's the defense. Maybe one game it's the special teams. Maybe there's just, you know, maybe it's a collection of all sorts of things that just bring them down to a B level or even a C level type of performance. But good football teams find a way to still win those games. And it often goes back to what kind of talent you have and all those sorts of things and the coaching and everything like that. But a team isn't going to play perfectly throughout the season. It's just not going to happen. You know, that's just the nature of a sport where you've got a bunch of 18 through 22-year-olds. You know, these guys aren't professionals. Even the professionals don't play perfectly as well. So Texas hasn't played one of those perfect games yet. If we're to say that you've got 4 bullets in the chamber in terms of perfect football games, I think Texas still has all 4 bullets in there. There's still, to me, a definite level of growth that this team can achieve. Now, if you believe in this Texas coaching staff, you believe that they're going to improve. They're going to be a better football team as the season progresses. Or maybe it's not so much being a better football team because I think on offense, we've seen them play an extremely high level. On defense, not so much against quality competition, but I think they took a big step forward against Oklahoma State. So maybe it's just being more consistent. But there's going to be a stretch of the season where there are going to be games where Texas is going to play really, really, really well. And it's going to play better than it has through the first 4 games this season. The question then becomes, when do those games occur? And when Texas does have those games where they're just not quite as sharp or not quite as good, can they still do what they did against Oklahoma State and find a way to win? But I personally, what I know about this coaching staff, what I've seen from this coaching staff so far, the way that they've viewed this as a project in building and building towards being a consistent high-level football team, I think Texas fans should have confidence in this team getting better. I think 2018 really showed us a lot. The season starts very poorly against Maryland, but at the end of the season, you know, Texas was playing well. I know it didn't win the Big 12 championship game against a really, really good Oklahoma team, But it had a real opportunity to win that football game in the fourth quarter. That game legitimately could have gone either way. So Texas improved as the season progressed. I know the Kansas game is a little weird and things like that, but generally speaking, it improved and it ended on a high note. So I think that you can expect improvement from this Texas team, although I don't know how much improvement you can expect on offense because it's been really, really good already. But there are some areas of growth there as well. But just overall, just in terms of overall performance and consistency and getting closer to those perfect type performances, I think Texas still has a noticeable level of growth to achieve. And I think that should excite Texas fans. I think that should be reason for optimism for Texas fans, knowing that this team isn't peaking. This team isn't playing close to perfect football already. This team still has improvement that it can make. And if you believe in the Texas coaching staff and you believe in the roster, we can expect some level of just natural progression. Now, to borrow a line from Shaka Smart, he uses this word all the time when talking about players and their growth and their production, those sorts of things. He said, it's never a linear path. And it's absolutely true. It's never just this predictable, gradual increase. You know, it's there are ups, there are downs, there's all those sorts of things. But what matters most is through those ups and downs, when you kind of zoom out of that graph and you're looking at that growth and you still see those ups and downs, but you still see overall just some sort of growth up. Maybe it's quick growth at times. Maybe it's slow growth at times. Maybe there's a setback here or there. But as long as you see that growth over the course of an entire season, that's what you're looking for. And I think that's what we're going to see from this Texas team. And a big reason why I believe in that is Sam Ellinger in the offense and the offensive line. But also, too, I had real questions about this Texas defense heading into the Oklahoma State game because I felt like they were having an identity crisis. I felt like heading into the season, they looked at their personnel, Todd Orlando, you know, his background wanting to attack and those sorts of things. I think they looked at their defense and said, you know what? We've recruited so well at corner. We know these guys are young. We know we've got some really talented safeties with some experience behind them. We're going to come after people. We're going to be okay playing man-to-man. We're going to try to come with all these exotic blitzes and all these sorts of things. And that's who we are going to be. And LSU told them, not so fast, Chief. If you're going to try to do that against a really, really good football team, you could have a bad time. And again, as I've said on multiple podcasts, tip your cap to Joe Burrow and LSU. And by the way, that offense, I believe, scored 65 points, and then this past week scored 66 points against Vanderbilt on the road, against the defensive minded coach. So that LSU offense absolutely looks for real. We might look back at the end of the season and say, maybe Texas didn't play as horribly as we thought against LSU because they're scoring points on everybody. But still, Texas went into that game really coming after Joe Burrow. They put their defensive backs in situations where they were asked to do a lot of one-on-one and those sorts of things, and it just didn't work. And I was like, how is Texas going to come out against this Oklahoma State team? Because you look at what Hubbard was doing as a runner. Tylan Wallace is one of the best receivers in the country. Spencer Sanders, a dynamic talent. I was just looking at it like, is Texas going to stick to its guns? Or, you know, and keep convincing itself that it's this defense it wants to be? Or are there adjustments going to be made? Because going back to that Rice game, Texas dialed it back. It didn't attack nearly enough. And that's Rice. Texas could have played any style it wanted and still would have won that game by at least 3-4 touchdowns. Just because Rice was just such an inferior opponent talent-wise. But Texas dialed it back. It dialed it back, I think, by design. And then we get into this Oklahoma State game, and that's what we saw. We saw Todd Orlando scale it back, play a lot of three-man fronts and those sorts of things, drop coverage. He rolled coverage towards Wallace with, you know, safety over the top. He, you know, with the a lot of cover two style type looks, but he really sent the corners aggressively in the run game, whether that was blitzes, whether that was keys, whatever it was. Todd Orlando and his staff saw something on tape and came up with a really good game plan to slow down Oklahoma State's rushing attack. And it involved the corners playing really aggressively against the run in helping that defensive line. And the defensive line played really, really well as well. I think it's one of the better defensive line performances we've seen at Texas, you know, maybe in quite some time. Not the best ever, but it definitely would stack up there over the last probably 5 or 6 years or so in terms of defensive line performance. So they saw something on tape, and they came up with a game plan. And I think deep down, when you if you sit Todd Orlando down and say, hey, I'm going to give you this script, and I'm going to tell you redshirt freshman quarterback can be a little shaky as a decision maker throwing the football, inexperienced, he's making his first Big 12 start on the road, what do you do? And I think he would tell you he's coming after that guy. He is coming after that guy. We've seen it before, you know, with Sean Robinson and Brock Purdy in the second, mainly in the second half of those games last year, where he just totally overwhelmed those guys. We saw that when JT Daniels came to Austin as a freshman at USC last year, he ended up coming after that guy at some point and really rattling him. Because I think that's who Todd Orlando is. But that's not what he did against Oklahoma State. Now, they did go to some pressure later in the football game, and I thought it was really well-timed pressure, and it took Spencer Sanders being a wizard in the pocket to avoid getting sacked multiple times. I thought it was great play calling by the defense. But early in the game, it's like, you know what? We know what you're going to do. We're going to dare you to make adjustments and try to be something different than who you are, because we're going to be different than what we've shown. And it worked. It worked. Not only did it work, the two guys at Texas absolutely couldn't let beat them, Wallace and Hubbard, they didn't do it. They didn't do it. You know, and part of that was Texas showing so much attention to Wallace. Even though it was kind of weird that Oklahoma State didn't target him more, I think he had 86 yards on 5 catches, and one of those was just an incredible play in double coverage. And I know some people are like, well, yeah, you're not going to throw at that type of coverage. Like, well, throwing at the other guys, that really wasn't working. Neither was running the football. Like, the guy was the leading receiver by far. At some point, you just got to take your chances or try to get creative and free him with different, you know, formations and things like that. So Oklahoma State just didn't really adjust. They were kind of like, this is who we are. And Texas is like, well, we know who you are. We're going to try to take it away from you and do something different than what we've done this season. And that told me a lot about this Texas defense, because guys were dropping like flies in the secondary. You know, they were already out without guys like Foster, Overshown. Caden Stearns didn't look close to 100% before he left the game with the injury. Josh Thompson gets hurt. Jalen Green gets hurt. I mean, you had looking around at some point, and you got Montrell Estelle and Chris Adamora running around in the secondary in the fourth quarter, and you're thinking, I would have never expected this at the beginning of the season. Like, that's the one position group. It's like, oh, safety? Check. Like, even if a guy gets hurt, I mean, they're so deep with all these players, and Overshown this, and Foster that, and Stearns this, and Jones that, and Chris Brown, and the list goes on. And you're looking up there in the fourth quarter, and it's like, man, Chris Adamora is out there recovering an onside kick and also knocking down the pass in the end zone to prevent a touchdown. Like, I would not have guessed that 4 games into the season. So all those factors, like the muff punts and things like that, the Texas defense, considering the opponent, considering some of the plays that Sanders made, considering the muffed punts, considering that a few times Texas players were in perfect position to make tackles and simply didn't do it, all those things considered, I think Texas played well on defense. I do. And I think that was my biggest question heading into that game was, is Texas going to stick to its guns, or is Texas going to adjust? And can Texas play quality defense against this type of opponent? Because if you look statistically at the rest of the teams in the Big 12, while the Big 12, I think, is an underrated conference right now, it's got a lot of solid football teams. I think it has a lot of fringe top 25 football teams. I think if you just looked at what conference has the most teams, like 20 to 35 or 20 to 40, I think it might be the Big 12. Now, they don't have many of those teams at the top, at the true echelon of the rankings, but there are not many pushovers in the Big 12. In fact, Kansas is not in the S&P Plus rated 100 or worse in S&P Plus for the first time since I can ever remember looking at statistics. They're 77th. And West Virginia 74th. And then beyond that, there's so many teams respectively rated in the statistics. So the Big 12 conference is underrated. It's a solid conference. But it's unusual in that we're so used to the Big 12 conference being just this fun and gun, scoring tons of points league. And it's not like that this year. Oklahoma, yes. Oklahoma State, yes. Texas, yes. Beyond that, you start to look at Iowa State, defensive-minded team. TCU, defensive-minded team. Texas Tech's without Alan Bowman for a long, long time. Kansas State, I think, is the biggest surprise of the Big 12 right now. What they went and did at Mississippi State was really impressive. But even then, I know they're playing really efficiently. Even I wouldn't really look at them and say, hey, you know, you don't want to get into a track meet with those guys. You know, they'll put 50 on you in a hurry. They're just not that type of team. They're not the, you know, when we're used to the, you know, the Baylor type teams when Art Briles was there and these all these insane shootouts in the Big 12 where it's like, oh, you know, Big 12 defense is optional. That's not really the case. So Oklahoma State, besides Oklahoma, I think is easily the best. The team best equipped to really, really challenge Texas defensively. So that's a big challenge that Texas just passed. And you can say what you want about Mike Gundy and the adjustments and the play calling and all those things, but I think a lot of credit goes to Todd Orlando and his staff for really answering the call. You know, a lot of people had questions about the defense of Todd Orlando after the LSU game. Like, is this going to be an issue this year? Like, is this going to be a situation where Texas is turning into a, you know, a Cliff Kingsbury Texas Tech team where it's just like, all right, go out, outscore them for us because we don't know what we're going to get on defense. And I think that Oklahoma State showed, okay, this can be a solid defense. Now, they're going to have to get some guys healthy. The injury list is a long one. Even though it's mostly defensive backs, they're still going to have to ask some guys that they didn't think they're going to have to ask to play some meaningful snaps very early on. So that's why the bye week comes at a good time. Hopefully they get some of those guys healthy. You know, going on the road at West Virginia. You know, West Virginia is not that Dana Holgorsen shootout football team. You know, West Virginia barely left Kansas with a win. I think it was 29-24 or 27-24. I don't have the scores in front of me. But they barely left Lawrence, Kansas with the win. So this isn't the, you know, this isn't the Will Grier, you know, Geno Smith West Virginia Mountaineers. It's a different football team with a new coach and a new quarterback trying to establish themselves. So I think that's a favorable matchup for Texas on the road. But I think that getting back to the general point about the Oklahoma State game, the defense answered the challenge. And there's still a level of growth here for this Texas team to achieve because that was far from a perfect football game all around. Tom Herman could have been better. Absolutely. You know, Sam Ellinger threw his first interception. While we can debate whether it was his fault or not because it was kind of it wasn't the best route. I mean, Malcolm Epps kind of floated upfield instead of what looked like coming across there, but it was a ball thrown into, I think, Aiton coverage. So nobody was perfect. And overall, the performance was far from perfect. But I think that's encouraging for Texas A&M's fans because I think that you can bet on improvement. Now, will they have their best performances when it matters most against the toughest competition? We'll have to wait and see. While we're on the subject of, you know, close to perfect performances or those perfect performances, Sam Ellinger, man, let's just read his statistics. He's 102 of 140 passing, 72.9% completion percentage, 1,237 yards, 8.8 passing yards per attempt. His adjusted passing yards per attempt is 10.7. Touchdowns, 15. Interceptions, 1. Turnovers, 1. Passer rating, 181.0. This is elite-level quarterback play that we're seeing. And I think that he's become so good, and more importantly for Texas, he's become so consistent that I feel like the expectations Texas fans have for Sam Ellinger are just insane right now. They just are. Where it's like we're so surprised when he makes a mistake now. Like the interception happened, it's like, oh, I'm not used to seeing that. I'm not used to Sam Ellinger being intercepted. Like I'm not used to him committing turnovers, period. Where it was just, you know, as a freshman, it was just you felt like you're gonna get a couple of them every game. It was just something you're gonna have to deal with. Now it's like, stop the presses. Really, Sam Ellinger threw an interception? Like, really? That happened? Just because of how good he's been and the way he ended last season and just the elite-level play he's shown. It's like, you know, the only thing that we really have left for Sam Ellinger right now is we nitpick his deep ball, even though there's been times where he's been incredible with his accuracy. You know, the ball he fit to Jake Smith against LSU for a touchdown, that beautiful dime he dropped in the back corner of the end zone to Devin Duvernay against Oklahoma State – We've seen some throws that have just been high level throws that, like, I think all we're left with the Sam Ehlinger is, like, to nitpick, you know, the deep ball accuracy, even though it's been, I don't know if inconsistent is fair, but there have been some throws where I think he'd want it back or would want it in the situation. I've documented at orangewoods.com, but that's, like, all we're left with. Even the interception is like, well, was it really his fault? You know, like the fourth and one thing, okay, maybe that was on him to not pull it back or whatever, but I think it was coming from the sideline to run the play. That's what we're left with the Sam Ehlinger right now. I mean, this is incredible level performance that we're seeing from a guy that's become so consistent that it's surprising when there's even – like it's surprising when he misses a throw. You know, it's surprising when a one-on-one ball down the field is just kind of off the mark a little bit, even though it's a 40, 45, 50-yard pass down the field where, you know, the timing matters and receivers' route matters and chemistry and all those things. That's just kind of where we are, Sam Ehlinger. I mean, the guy has been playing with a rib injury now for multiple weeks, which Omar Richardson reported at orangewoods.com. And I was like, I'm thinking to myself, like, I rewatch every game extremely closely for my three things after rewatch story at Orange Bloods. And the camera is often always fixated on Ehlinger, whether he's on the sidelines or on the field, especially when he's on the field. And I was like asking myself, I can't remember a time where he ever even looked like truly huffing and puffing out of breath. Like the guy's been playing with a rib injury and it you would have never noticed it. Never. Not once. Not once in his production, not once in his demeanor, not once in his facial expression, not once did he like grab his rib or his stomach or his side. I mean, he's playing incredible football. I mean, he is playing Heisman-level football. The problem with him right now is Joe Burrow is doing the same thing. Tua at Alabama is doing the same thing. Jalen Hurts is doing the same thing. You know, he hasn't been able to distinguish himself because there's been a lot of, you know, really, really good quarterback play across the country at some higher-ranked programs where guys are undefeated right now. So I think that he'd be much more in the national picture if not for that, and if not for the loss against LSU. But he's going to have his opportunities, mainly in the Cotton Bowl against Oklahoma. And then if Texas gets back to the Big 12 championship game, that's going to be another opportunity. But I think we're at the point now with Ehlinger that he's been so consistently good that we just look at this Texas offense, and especially with the way this Texas offensive line is playing, and Devin Duvernay. My goodness, Devin Duvernay has been awesome. The Texas offensive line has been really, really good. Really good. Keontae Ingram showed major signs of life against Oklahoma State. Jake Smith leads the nation in touchdown receptions for a freshman. But Ehlinger he's been so consistently good that his play has raised the expectations of what everyone else has for him, especially Texas fans that are so fixated on him that, like, any tiny little mistake, like, whoa. What's wrong with Ehlinger? What's wrong? He's got 181 passer rating. He's got 15 touchdowns, one interception. He's got a 72.9% completion percentage. He has almost a complete mastery of what he's doing offensively at the line of scrimmage and how to get his team into the right plays. It's outstanding stuff. So we're at the point with him where we can just say, you look at the schedule and you're like, well, you know, even if the Texas defense doesn't play that well, Sam's going to give them a chance to win. Just because the offense has been so good. And they will run into some tougher defenses than they've seen. You know, I know LSU was super, super talented, and that was a really tough challenge. TCU's going to have a really tough defense, I think. Iowa State is really known for its defense. I think Kansas State could be a tough defense to deal with as well. But even still, there's not a single team left on the schedule for Texas in the regular season where you're like, oh, no, they might hold the offense under 30 points. I think you look at the entire schedule, it's like, well, they're going to break 30 this game. They're going to break 30 this game. Might break 40 this game because he's playing so well. And the surrounding parts of the offense have just been at a really high level as well. Like, Colin Johnson's been out, and, like, I haven't really noticed. Okay, I've noticed a couple times when Malcolm Epps just wasn't the same player down the field. It wasn't that same guy in those tough situations where Ehlinger's trying to fit a ball into a tight window. But other than that, like, the offense has just kept humming along. That's nothing against Johnson, but it speaks to how well these other guys are playing and how well Ehlinger is playing. So, this guy is playing at a really, really high level, and I think Texas fans should have full confidence in what he's going to do the rest of the season. I would like to talk some NFL and some fantasy football, but my NFL team is a shit show, and my fantasy team is about in that same boat. Like, I compare my main league fantasy team, which is I'm in a league with Anwar Richardson and Jeff Ketchum and Alex Dunlap, all staff members at OrangeBloods.com and all guys that do podcasts on the Yak. It's a super, super competitive league. I think, like, the entire roster watch staff who just, like, are professionals in fantasy football, they're all in the league. So it's a very, very competitive league. I've won it twice. I won it last year. I'm 0-3 right now. I just hate my roster. I can't give specific details because I feel like I'm going to lose trade leverage if I do that. But there's just a few things in my draft where it's like, I thought it was going to be one thing, and it just wasn't. And it really sucks the fun out of the football season when your NFL team sucks, your main fantasy team sucks, and your NFL team sucking has negatively influenced your main fantasy team. That's just where I am right now. And I can't recall the last time I've been in this boat. You know, the Steelers are 0-3, and their quarterback's out for the season. My fantasy team's 0-3, and I might be out for the season here soon because I got miserable matchups this week, and I'm probably going to be 0-4 even though I have Christian McCaffrey, and I've had the most points scored against me in the league so far. And just, God, it makes you just want to cuss. Like, shit. It's just not fun. So we're not going to talk about fantasy football or the NFL. We're going to talk about our two things I really, really like, and I try to end this podcast, the Dutchman Show, with either some type of food discussion or something like that. Two things I really like: coffee and food, well, mainly breakfast tacos. So for the longest time, you know, I really enjoy in the mornings going to a coffee shop. And right now we just moved basically into central Austin, and I live pretty close to that Summer Moon. If you've ever gone down Burnett and Anderson, or the Burnett and Anderson intersection, right on Anderson past Burnett, there's Summer Moon Coffee, fairly new place. And one of my favorite things in the morning, because I work from home, is I'll get my dog, my ferocious Willie, 12-pound Shih Tzu. If you read Orange Bloods, you know all about Willie. And I get him, and we'll walk to the coffee shop. He loves it. He really loves people and just getting to interact with people and being outside. So we usually walk over there in the morning. It gets my brain going and gets me working and things like that. And I found myself that one coffee a day hasn't been enough. This kind of started like a year ago because, you know, my wife has changed my sleeping schedule where I actually get up at a respectable time now. I'm usually out of bed by 8:15 now, which 4 years ago, no freaking way, no chance. So I end up kind of hitting a wall later on, as most people do, and I really like coffee. So I would find myself like spending, you know, another $25 a week on coffee because I'd go get a second one. Because like, hey, I can take my dog and go hang out, whatever, he likes it. It's like, man, I gotta stop spending that much money. We had a Keurig that we got for free from our wedding, which we used a ton. Nothing against Keurig, it was fine. But I was like, I wanna learn how to just make my own coffee. I wanna go get some really nice craft beans and just, you know, make my own coffee and see if, like, you know, that makes a difference. Maybe that'll keep me from going out and getting a second coffee because it's really, really good. Well, I did. I learned how to do, you know, the pour over strategy with, you know, the filters and things like that, and just kind of making your own brew. I went to Epoch and got some craft beans. It's O-N-Y-X Coffee Lab. I don't know how you pronounce that. I'm just going to spell it. But if you go to Epoch, you can see it. They've got different flavors and things like that. I started with the geometry one because it's like kind of in the middle between like traditional and modern style beans and things like that. And the first time I did it, I was like, this is a game changer. This is so much better than what I've been used to doing. Like, it used to be throw the Texas pecan Keurig into the Keurig machine and fire it up, and, you know, it would do the job. But now that I've been doing this, it's like a whole new world. It's like, I didn't know what I was missing on. It's like, I can get a bag of beans ground up for like 18 bucks, and it's going to last me like at least 60 coffees, at least. And it's like, I didn't know what I was missing out on. So if you're like me and you're a coffee amateur and, you know, you're trying to cut some corners and you really enjoy the good taste, but you don't really know what you're doing, trust me, just learn how to do one of those pour-over styles. Go get some really good beans at one of these coffee shops. I know that Summer Moon, I haven't tried theirs yet, but they're famous for like, well, I haven't tried making it on my own, but they're famous for like their wood-fired or coffee beans or something like that. Go try theirs out. Go to Epoch. They've got a bunch It's a game changer. It's a game changer. And I'm really, really enjoying it. Usually like 4:30, 5 o'clock, it's like, all right, fire up the old school kettle or teapot or whatever you call those things. It'll start hissing or whatever. Shows you how much I know. Fire that bad boy up. Get the beans going in there and just a little pour the beans and then just the pour over strategy. And then you wait a little bit and you pour it again. You wait a little bit and pour it again. And you get yourself some really, really, really good coffee. So I've learned that. Even though I am 33 years old, about to be 34 years old. It feels like I should have learned that a long time ago. But breakfast tacos. So I am a big fan of like Mexican bakeries. I think I'm at the point now, and I may have talked about this on a previous podcast. I don't know. I've done so many recently that I've forgotten what some of the topics are. But I'm at the point now where like if it's a Mexican bakery, I'm stopping at it. I just am, you know, or if I'm in search of tacos and that comes up on my search, I'm going to go try it because they're just, I've never been to a Mexican bakery that has bad tacos. And a big reason why, and I don't eat a lot of bread because I do cut carbs where I can. It's just the one thing that really makes my weight fluctuate is carbs and particularly bread. And honestly, I don't really miss bread that much. But when you go to a Mexican bakery, you have to try the flour tortillas. You have to. And I went to Mi Tradicion, which is kind of near our new neighborhood, at the recommendation of some people in our neighborhood Facebook group. They're so good. It's so good. It reminds me of the La Mexicana Bakery, which I've talked about at times on Dustin Show podcast that we used to live by when we lived in Travis Heights. I'd go there and get like $1.85 breakfast tacos, and they're incredible. They're just so good. Like the tortillas are super fresh. The ingredients are all fresh. The way they make them, it's just a different style breakfast taco. And man, I'm at the point now, it's like, you know, when I drive to Dallas and Houston, I always stop at the kolache places. You know, Jurescos if you're going to Houston on I-10, Check Stop if you're going to Dallas on I-35. I'm at the point now where I go on road trips. If I see one of those, like, non-chain kolache places, I'm like, I got to stop because I've never been to one where it's bad. And now I'm at the point with Mexican bakeries, like, I'm going to go. I have to try their tacos. And I haven't even gotten into their lunch or dinner style things or anything like that yet. I've only had the breakfast tacos a sample. But they're incredible. The tortillas are incredible. And the bang for the buck, I've never been to a Mexican bakery where the tacos are more than $3. You know, you go to some places like Torchy's, and I love Torchy's. You go to some of these places, and it's a breakfast taco is like $3.50, you know, $3.75, maybe even $4 at some places. I've never been to a Mexican bakery where they're over $3. Heck, I don't even know if I've ever been to one where it's close to that amount. So in Mexican bakeries, I trust. And now in pour over coffee with these fancy craft beans that I actually understand how to use and make, I trust. So hopefully I'm passing on some new wisdom to you in the food and coffee world. Chances are you might know this already, but if you don't, you're welcome. And with that, we will end episode 18 of the Dustin McComas Show on theyak.com. I am Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com. Thank you so much for listening. You can follow me on Instagram, Dustin McComas, DustinMccomas. You can follow me on Twitter, @DMcComasOB. Please follow The Yak on Twitter. Please follow The Yak on Facebook. Follow Orange Bloods on Twitter and on Facebook as well so you can keep up with all of us and all of our content. I am recording this on a Friday. I hope you're enjoying your Friday. If you aren't, I hope this makes it go by a little bit quicker, gets you a little bit closer to the weekend. We don't have a Texas football game this weekend, but I think everybody will enjoy a little breather just to kind of relax, you know, watch some other college football games, maybe do some things around the house, maybe go on a vacation. Like some of our OB staff guys did, they had a weekend getaway, which is a great idea. I know Anwar's down in, I believe, Tampa, seeing his family, and Jason's up in Chicago. So I hope those guys are enjoying their weekend as well, which is a great idea because this is the perfect time to take a breather. So I hope that everybody enjoys a nice, relaxing weekend. Get some Mexican bakery breakfast tacos in your life. Get that extra coffee if you need it. But most importantly, until I talk to you next time, take care.